I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
The most glorious two that ever lived, and you can't teach that. Here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 72 right here on the Absolution Network. And on today's, or tonight, or whenever you listen to this podcast, on this episode, the long-awaited, long-delayed, 3 weeks after the fact, review of NXT TakeOver San Antonio and the 2017 Royal Rumble. All that and more on this episode of CM Jew. And with that being said, as I jokingly talked about a quick second ago, you know, this has been delayed like 3 weeks. The original plan, by the way, after releasing, because I said at the end of the last episode that I'd be reviewing the 97 Royal Rumble. The original plan was to do two episodes at the end of January. The first one, of course, obviously, review being the 1997 Royal Rumble, because I had already, more importantly, reviewed last year WrestleMania 13, so I wanted to bookend that, which sort of leads, I think you can guess, the reason I reviewed the 96 Royal Rumble is because this year I'm planning on watching WrestleMania 12, which I have never watched before. I mean, I've seen clips of the backstage brawl and, of course, all the famous clips that they show of the Iron Man match, but I've never watched WrestleMania 12. So, and I've not watched it yet. I'm waiting, of course, till March when I review it to watch it. So that was originally planned to do that, to have to review Royal Rumble 97. And then, of course, the following episode, which would have been episode 73, was to review both NXT TakeOver San Antonio and Royal Rumble 2017, but alas, as things happened, complications, like really getting busy with school and continuing to put it off, it's like, oh, I'll do it in an hour, I have a really bad case of doing that. Yeah, as you can see, it's a really bad case of getting pushed back 3 weeks. I actually was going to do this episode and record it last weekend, and I was going to do it to where I was going to combine everything together. I was going to do a review of the Royal Rumble 97, NXT TakeOver San Antonio, and of 2017 Royal Rumble. But as I started doing it, I realized, like, this is so much, and there's no way I can do all this stuff justice. So next year, without a doubt, I'm going to review the 97 Royal Rumble. And it was a much better Royal Rumble, mind you, I'll say this, at least in my opinion, than it was of 1996. As far as the other matches accompanying the Royal Rumble match itself, including the, you know, the heavyweight fight between Psycho Sid and Shawn Michaels. And I am kind of bummed that I have to wait a year to do it, because I had this diatribe that I was planning to talk about Psycho Sid and how I think he is very underrated as a big man, because he really moves very good, especially during that time where he was Psycho Sid. You know, I made mention last year, by the way, during my review of WrestleMania 13, that I actually enjoyed the Psycho Sid Undertaker match. It wasn't until Bret Hart came in and screwed everything up that the match fell apart for me. But again, go back and listen to my review of WrestleMania 13 for the full story on that. There are some other things I want to get into before we get into the reviews proper. Just covering sort of the past couple weeks of wrestling and sort of wrestling news. A couple things. One, recent news was that Ricochet is completely apparently out of his Lucha Underground contract. He's apparently, as my understanding is, he's not coming back. What that means, does he have to wait till the end of season 3? I don't know. I would imagine he could wrestle, because again, if he wrestles as Ricochet, again, he's under the mask as Prince Puma. They could do that. That wouldn't be interfering with any storylines. But I find it very interesting as it's up. Probably he's going to stay in New Japan and just do a lot of indie dates. But, yeah, there's this little dream I have of Neville versus Ricochet at WrestleMania in Orlando. Yeah, that dream is alive and kicking in my head, so I'm in my happy place. Especially with Neville doing his current villain role that he's in right now. Oh, God. The match. Of course, also Austin Aries has been cleared recently to wrestle as well. So, of course, that match is also on the table. It's like, there's so much potential. So much potential. Of course, my dream match would be Kota Ibushi versus Neville versus Ricochet in a triple threat match. But I will stop now before I send you into orgasm. What else happened? Over the past 3 weeks, the XFL documentary, the 30 for 30 documentary, was shown on ESPN. I watched it. And I thought it was a really, really good, and I thought really fair documentary. You know, Vince was on it talking about the mistakes that were made. It owned up to his mistakes. And, of course, I love how they were talking about, you know, the second game, which turned out to be really good. But then, of course, the power cut out, and they had to go to a different game. And just the difference of ideas. You know, Vince was running it more like an entertainment show. Ebersol wanted to run it more like a sports show, and just, again, the mixing of minds, but I thought there was a lot of good potential there. You know, it made me really think back to when the XFL came out, and I may be in the minority here. I remember, though, actually enjoying the game, you know. Of course, it wasn't the NFL caliber level, but it was football, and if you love football, you love football. Whether it's good or bad, I mean, obviously there's... See, I don't mind something being bad. I rather care if something's boring. You know, sometimes being bad can be funny because it's so bad, it's good thing. But the worst thing is to be bad and to be boring. And the XFL, while maybe bad, was definitely not boring. At least to me as a football fan. So I was always in that minority of people who actually, and I know I've admitted it before, that I actually liked the XFL. But it was a very interesting look at what they did and sort of the things that, you know, the NFL does now. I think we don't even realize that the XFL did first, like being in that huddle, the camera overhead on the wire, and all these other things that were really innovative. So yeah, I really good documentary. I highly suggest you check it out. Over at New Japan, they had New Beginnings, which I saw a lot of the highlights for it. Okay. I think some good matches worth checking out. I hear very good things, and I've seen very good things of the Okada Suzuki match. Yeah, I heard very good things, and from what I saw, it looked very good. I hear that there was a lot of work and a lot of selling, which makes me really want to watch the match. So I highly suggest you go and check that out as well. And, of course, I guess the final thing I'll sit here and talk about is, of course, as of this recording, I'm recording this Saturday night, Sunday morning, so it is officially Sunday, as past 12, so today is supposed to be the Elimination Chamber. Look forward to seeing that. Unfortunately, for you future people, may not know, this is also the day, the news, or should I say yesterday, was the day that Chavo Guerrero Sr. has passed away. I just actually found this out right before doing the recording. Chavo Guerrero Sr., Chavo Guerrero Jr.'s father, legendary member of the Guerrero family, wrestling down there in the Guerrero territory, trying to remember, I'm blanking on the, and I apologize, I'm probably being yelled at by so many people, and I apologize, but down in the territory that the Guerreros, El Paso, where they, that was the Guerreros territory, and so legendary status there, and in Mexico, my heart goes out to the Guerrero family. I'm sorry for your passing, and may Chavo Guerrero Sr. rest in peace. Again, just found this out, and, I don't have so many memories of Chavo Guerrero Sr. as he was a wrestler, because, again, I wasn't even born yet at that point, and I didn't get to see him wrestle. But I have gotten to see his son, Chavo Guerrero Sr., Chavo Guerrero Jr., excuse me, wrestle. There's a blooper for the blooper reel. But to watch Chavo Guerrero Jr. wrestle. And, of course, the legendary feud that Chavo Guerrero Jr. had with Rey Mysterio that involved Chavo Guerrero Sr. being in Jr.'s side in the thousands when Rey Mysterio came over to WWE. And the matches that those two had and that he was a part of were absolutely tremendous, wonderful matches. Definitely the Chavo Guerrero Jr. / Senior feud with Rey Mysterio was definitely one of the better feuds in WWE during that time. So Chavo Guerrero Sr. will be missed. He led a great life. He's a great legendary career. And may he rest in peace. So there really is no segue from such a topic to go into that it's time to start talking about NXT TakeOver San Antonio. I probably could have made a segue that, speaking of El Paso in Texas 3 weeks ago, TakeOver San Antonio happened. So let's get into it. But that didn't sound right. So... But seriously, let's do get into it. I'm sure there's plenty of other wrestling news. I know about the Hardys apparently can teleport now. That's just great. I swear to God, if the Hardys teleport into my room, you will never see them again. So, T-Dub, you might want to start saying your prayers and taking your vitamins that never happens. There's that. And I know there's other news to talk about. But I don't want this to be an hour and a half show. So it's time to get into NXT TakeOver Dallas, hosted by the WWE and its NXT brand. Its sponsors were KFC and Vood, the streaming video service that's spelled V-U-D-U. Honestly, I think it was Corey Graves who said it during the sponsorship talk during the show, and I thought he said lube. But it took place on January 28th, 2017, to an attendance of 9,465 at the Friedman Coliseum in San Antonio, Texas. Your color commentators for the evening are Percy Primetime Watson, Corey Graves in his very last NXT special, and Tom Phillips. Ladies and gentlemen, this is NXT TakeOver San Antonio.
Glorious! No, I won't give in. I won't give in till I'm victorious. And I will defend. I will defend.
We have 5 matches on docket, and the very first match of the night featured Eric Young, the leader of Sanity, along with his cohorts Alexander Wolf and Killian Dane. I think it's pronounced Don, Killian Don. I'm sure people are screaming at me, and rightfully so. Hey, you know that it takes me a while to get people's names. Just look at how long it took me to get Los Ingobernables. See, now I've screwed that up too. Los Ingobernables de Ha Pong. See, it took me a long time to be able to say that, and I still can't just say it on cue. So it's gonna take me a while to get the last name for Killian. I just like to refer to him as Big Damo. So, of WCPW, What Culture Pro Wrestling, which tomorrow features the True Destiny IPPV, which you can see on Fight Network for $14 or on What Culture Extra for $6 a month, featuring Kurt Angle versus Alberto El Patron, Ricochet versus Will Ospreay, and for the WCPW World Heavyweight Title, Joe Henry versus Drew Galloway. Wow, I completely went into a What Culture Pro Wrestling promo for their IPPV. I don't know why. I really don't know why. Somebody help me why. I know it's because I'm a whore, but why? Anyways, Eric Young of Sanity facing Ty Dillinger in a singles match that took place had a time of 10 minutes and 55 seconds. this was a very good match. I actually very much like Sanity. I really love the Sanity group. I love the three guys and, of course, Nikki Cross. And I love their look as they come down to the ring again, this sort of being this, like, sort of gang that seems like from a post-apocalyptic society and the spotlights and everything. And it's such a cool entrance. I love the music that goes along with it and everything. And I really think they have a really cool look to them and everything. And it really gets me into them. And I love Eric Young working heel with this group at this leader, like, I'm a leader, I'm sanity. And you do what we tell you to do. And of course, you have the most over person in the company in the perfect 10 of Ty Dillinger. And this was a really good opening match, really good opening. Ty Dillinger continues to be that guy who shines the most when he's losing. He's like Sami Zayn, like Tommy Dreamer in that sense, in that he's a guy that a lot of times he comes out better when he loses because he's at his best when he is chasing something, not when he obtains it. And that moment when he does obtain something is going to be great, but you need to sort of quickly go back into him chasing after something because that's when he works best. But they had a really, really good match. Very fluid, had a lot of energy to it. Eric Young got to show more of himself in this match. That was really good. And it also showcased Ty Dillinger as this really this guy who deserves to be wrestling among the main event wrestlers like the Eric Youngs, the Shinsuke's, the Roderick Strong's, the Bobby Roode's. He deserves to be in that area. He showed that in Toronto, and he showed it again here. So it was a really, really good opening match. I'm trying to think of some things that stood out to me, because I'm blinking, and that's what you always want to do when you're thinking of things that stood out is blank. But the near falls, like, they really put a lot of great drama into this where you thought, oh, it's over here, it's over here. And it made you believe that, oh, Ty Dillinger might win this one. So that was really good. And then, of course, the finish to where the interference by Wolf and Killian ultimately leading to Eric Young, hitting something. There was a counter to counter that got blocked, and I think he went. Dillinger went for a roll up, and he got caught. And Eric Young just flipped him into that wheelbarrow net breaker that is his finisher, which is such a sweet looking finisher. I love the look of it, and getting the 1-2-3 there. So, yeah, very fluid match. I really liked the ending. I thought it was a good opening for the show. Your next match would be Roderick Strong versus Aldrene Cien Almas, which had a time of 1 minute 40 seconds. And lest I forget, I want to say here, I love this match. This may be my favorite match of the night for NXT. And I know that maybe I'd be saying much, but I think a lot of it has to do with Aldrene making a lot of references and showing a lot of love to Los Ingobernables de Japón. I'm not a fan. No, I'm not a fan at all. By the way, I said it on cue. Nah, I had to practice earlier. Damn it. Anyways, It's by the way, that's like my new favorite thing. Now that I can actually say it, it's like, oh, I can say it. I'm like, everything is Los Ingobernables de Japón. I can say it. But no, that's one thing I love that he's been doing is Aldrete has been throwing a lot of references to Naito and Los Ingobernables into his match from doing the whole, you know, pounding his chest and then throwing the fist up. To doing Tranquilo. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I'm probably not, but Naito's finishing move that spinning, flipping into a reverse DDT that he does. There's a name for it in the SmackDown games, and I can't remember. It was like something, something Japanese. which sounds horrible, by the way. That's like the Japanese something DDT. I mean, the only thing left for him to do is to do the whole Naito making the eye larger thing. But that adding to his character, sort of bringing sort of Los Ingobernables in a way into WWE is just so awesome. And then you have these two who go out and put out this wonderful match. And I'm not kidding when I'm saying it probably is my favorite match of the evening. And it's no disrespect to the great match that we will see later, which of Nakamura and Rude, and we'll get into that. But they went out, and these two had a really, really wonderful match that I felt a lot of people are underrating. And it was just fluid and wonderful and so entertaining in the near fall after near fall. And just strong, continuing to kick out. Almas getting frustrated, but yet seemingly always staying one step ahead of him, but then finally Strong being able to get a hold of him, give him, of course, the master of the backbreaker, giving him a couple backbreakers, and leading to the sort of the setup with the sick kick. Getting to 1-2-3, it was a great showcase for Strong that he very much needed. Because I don't think Roderick Strong has had the chance to really show everything about him. And he really got the show in this match. And I think it really helped his stock. It really made him seem like he was this really big free agent that deserved to be in the conversation for the NXT Championship. Just like Ty Dillinger sort of solidified that with the match before. And Almas looked absolutely wonderful here too. And he just... I think he continues to really find himself with this sort of villain character. It's a villain character, but it's not a villain character in sort of the way that, like, Rude is like, you obviously, we don't hate him, but you should. But it's like, just like, the you little weasel, you, or, not weasel, because there's only one weasel. But, he's a villain very much in the same way that Los Ingobernables is a villain. Like, he's really more of a tweener. Again, the references to Los Ingobernables, and yes, I'm just going to continue to say it because I can now say it on cue without screwing it up, and this makes me happy. It makes me happy because I can remember the time where T-Dub was nothing but on my case because I could not say it. Hey, T-Dub, Los Ingobernables, de Japón, baby! I'm not petty at all. No, I'm not petty. But no, this is a really wonderful match, and I really think everybody should give it a second look. I mean, again, the only thing I can criticize in this case is I don't know if Roderick Strong works well as a face. It's sort of the same thing that Andrade Almas was dealing with when he first came in. It's like, we know him so well as a heel and part of, you know, the Mount Rushmore wrestling with the Young Bucks and Adam Cole, and they work so well as heels. It's like, now you have him as this babyface, and he doesn't exactly work well as a babyface. But again, he will find that character that will work for him in WWE in time. But right now, it's about showcasing what he can do in the ring. Our next match... hold on, I gotta take a drink of water before I go like 10 minutes on this one. The Authors of Pain, Akeem and Rezar, with their manager, the legendary Paul Heyring, versus DIY Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT Tag Team Championships. 14 minutes and seconds, a pure... wonderful tag team goodness. This was an absolutely fantastic match. Gargano and Ciampa took the Authors of Pain to the limit. Great back and forth. Again, Authors of Pain's looking strong and just looking like beasts. And then, of course, the near falls and then the finish with the the powerbomb slapping Gargano and Ciampa and slamming them down, ultimately leading to the final chapter. Just back and forth throughout the match. I just found it wonderful. Just great tag team wrestling. NXT continues to be the place in the world to really showcase wonderful, great tag team wrestling. And I think it's underrated. And it's been great for a long time. For the past year. It's like, this is where you want to go when you want to see great tag team wrestling. And again, yeah, the Authors of Pain are still green. They still have ways to go. But there's so much potential there. And DIY made them look like gold in this match. Because it was a great match. And they will grow and they will get better. They are young. And that's the really scary thing about all this. Is they look like monsters. And they're young. They're going to get better. Your new NXT Tag Team Champions are the Authors of Pain, who have completed at least their first book. And, it was a really good match. Again, the criticism could be that they're maybe pushing them too hard and putting the tag team titles on them too quick. But when you have monsters like this, you have to. And if they do it right, whoever finally defeats them for the belts, that is going to be huge. So, very good match. Now, this brings us, unfortunately, and it sounds so harsh and off-key to say this, but by virtue, the worst match of the night. Mind you, of any NXT special, the worst match of the night is usually the best match of any other show. But the other thing is that the next match is the Fatal 4-Way match for the NXT Women's Championship. And I hate saying that because the women have been killing it over the past couple years. And, like, if you rate the NXT matches, the women's match is never, ever near the bottom as far as quality. But again, this is one of those situations where I think they don't really have anything for Asuka, and it was just put together. It's really more of a showcase for the other three. You never felt like Asuka was going to lose, and it's like, Asuka's going to kill you. Asuka's going to kill you. But like I said, the next match is the Fatal 4-Way match for the NXT Women's Championship. You have the NXT Women's Champion Asuka defending against Nikki Cross, Billie Kay, and Peyton Royce. And it sort of had three parts. There was the opening part where all four were together. Then there was the second part where Asuka gets taken out, and then it's basically Nikki Cross versus Billie Kay versus Peyton Royce, and which ultimately leads to a table spot. And then when that table spot hits, it then becomes Asuka versus Billie Kay versus Peyton Royce. So there were three distinct sort of zones in this match that went about 10 minutes. The match went 10 minutes. Excuse me there. I'm getting sidetracked. It went about, let's say, I'm being distracted by sounds on the stairs above, because I'm easily distracted. Live podcasting is awesome. The match itself was 10 minutes, so sort of each of these segments was like about 3 minutes, like 3 minutes, 15 seconds each. Not that it was planned that way, but it almost seemed like it was, because really each of these segments sort of had that time. Like, you had the opening Fury. There was sort of Billie Kay and Peyton were trying to get one up on both Cross and Asuka, which is what the real match was. It's what everybody wanted to see. And it seemed like this match is all about sort of teasing, oh, are Cross and Asuka going to finally get at each other? Are they finally going to get at each other? And they never really do. I thought it showcased Billie Kay and Peyton Royce as a very good team. But at the same time, the bad part is I don't think they ever made them feel like they were in the league of Asuka. And that's really what we need, is we need some woman who feels like they are in the league of Asuka. But obviously they've yet to want to do Asuka versus Ember Moon, which I think that's going to finally be the one. So there's that. But I will say this, the sort of table spot where they where Billie Kay and Peyton Royce suplex Cross off the announce table into another table. That was, I really much like that. Again, really showcasing Kay and Royce as villains. But, again, Asuka looking like a beast. And like I said, the real worry with this is that they're not making enough of the sort of new women look like real competitors. They're just having Asuka run through everybody. And I think it's detrimental to the division as a whole. I mean, you can still make her look like a killer and make her look like a beast, and yet also have the rest of the division look stronger. But like, if anybody ever asked you today who could challenge Asuka outside of Ember Moon, who would you say? You could also probably say Nikki Cross, because she seems like it too, but that's really the only two. But you have all these other women that they're not quite there yet in their stage of development. So that brings us to the last match of the night, as we have the glorious one, Bobby Roode, versus Shinsuke Nakamura, the King of Strong Style, for the NXT Championship. There are a lot of surprise. First of all, let's talk about entrances, because I know that's what everybody was excited for. And Bobby Roode had a great entrance with the women. I mean, channeling his inner Ric Flair with the purple robe and everything. But Shinsuke Nakamura was better, with the whole sort of platform of him coming out on, and just like, you knew he couldn't do the violins anymore, because like, they took it to its max at Toronto, so it was very interesting to see him do something new. And again, it's Shinsuke Nakamura. That entrance is just electrifying. They then had the match, which was a really great match. Great back and forth. Great different styles. Each wrestler got to really showcase his style and work it really well. The selling was wonderful in this match. Really, I think it's the selling is underrated in this match, just because the selling at the end of the match was so over the top and so wonderful, because it fooled everybody, that I think everybody forgets about the selling in the rest of the match. But so that really became the story of this match, though, was Shinsuke Nakamura's selling. You know, when he goes for, I'm trying to remember what he went for. I think he went for a jumping knee where Bobby Roode had like rolled to the outside and stood up on the apron, and Nakamura was on the turnbuckle. I'm trying to remember this from 3 weeks ago, mind you. And he jumps and hits it, and then kind of lands awkward on the apron, and just he immediately starts selling the leg. And it's one of those things to where I got to give props to WWE, because you keep, at that point, he's selling it really well. So I'm like, my God, is he injured? And it's like, you start looking at the referee, and you're looking for the referee to put that X sign up. But they never show it. And then they start showing people, and there's Matt Bloom is out there. Apparently, Cassius Ohno would be out there later. the wink wink to stuff they're going to start setting up for those who know these spoilers of the latest NXT taping. And then of course it was that thing like, oh, he's really selling. Is he really hurt? But like, if he really hurt his knee, they wouldn't let him wrestle. But oh, he's got to be selling. But man, he's really selling that leg, and it's wonderful. But like, is he really hurt? Like, no. They're allowing Root to put him in the Texas Cloverleaf. He can't be injured, is he? And like, you didn't know. The selling of that leg, of that injury, was absolutely fantastic by Nakamura. Just wonderful. Oh, man. And like I said, it was a really good back-and-forth match. Really entertaining. So much charisma from both men. Is it better than Roderick Strong, Aldrinae, Cien Almas? Yes. It is better. I think I enjoyed Strong versus Almas better than I did this. So in that case, that's why that's my favorite match of the night. You know, it's this hard thing because on one hand you have, this is the better wrestling match, but I enjoyed Strong and Almas more. And that's hard to do with people as charismatic as Rude and Nakamura, but it's a lot of times that can be the thing. It's those little things. Final thoughts on NXT TakeOver San Antonio. Top spots. The Authors of Pain winning the titles, number three. Number two, Aldrete Cien Almas with all his Los Ingobernables, De Japón references. But number one has to be this Nakamura's selling of his leg. And in my top three matches of the night, number three is the Authors of Pain versus DIY. Number two, and again, these are my favorites of this. This is not that they're better or anything, but for me, number two is Bobby Roode versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the NXT Championship. But my number one match of the night, for me, is Roderick Strong versus Aldrinae Cien Almas. So, overall, I thought it was a great takeover. They're starting to showcase sort of this new era of NXT. And again, NXT always will be a developmental territory. And again, I think this takeover showed it. There will be the takeover Brooklyns and the occasional takeovers like Takeover Dallas to where like they've reached the end of storylines and it's not developmental, baby. They're ready for the big time. But their NXT is back in rebuilding and back to developing. And I mean, while yes, a lot of these wrestlers are already ready, they're tweaking. That didn't sound right either. But they're working on their characters again. They're working to improve it. They're sharpening their skills. This is what NXT is now, and it's still better than most anything on the planet. So NXT TakeOver San Antonio, really wonderful, gets a 4.5 out of 5 for me. So that's it for NXT TakeOver, but we're not done yet, folks. Oh, no. Oh, I know we're 40 minutes in, but we still got one more pay-per-view to go. Aren't you glad I decided not to review Royal Rumble 1997? But, you know, Royal Rumble 97 was in San Antonio, and this is 2017, so it's time to review the return after 20 years to San Antonio, the Royal Rumble, as WWE, Raw, and SmackDown present Royal Rumble 2017, sponsored by KFC and the streaming video company that sounds like Lube Vood. It took place day later on January 29th, 2017, to an attendance of 52,020 at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Royal Rumble 2017.
Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, my time is now.
In case you forgot or fell off, I'm still hot, knock your shell off. My money stacked fat, plus I can't turn the swell off. The franchise doing big business, I live this, it's automatic. I win this, so you hear those horns, you finish. A soldier, and I stay under you fighting. Plus I'm storming on you chumps like I'm thunder and lightning. Ain't no way you breaking me, kid, I'm harder than nails. Plus I keep it on lock like I'm part of the jail. I'm slaughtering stale competition. I got the whole block wishing they could run with my division, but they gone fishing with no bait. Kid, your boy hold weight. I got my soul straight, I brush your mouth like Colgate. In any weather, I'm never better. Your boy's so hot, you never catch me in the next man's sweater. If they hate, let them hate. I drop your whole clan. Lay your ass down for the 3 second tan.
Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, yeah. My time is now.
Let's get into the 2017 Royal Rumble. Oh, damn, I hurt my throat actually while doing that. Damn. Ugh. Thank God I have good old spring water near me. So we have, counting the pre-show matches, we have 8 matches to go through. So let's make our way. Starting with the pre-show matches, we have at first Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson versus Cesaro and Sheamus for the WWE Raw Tag Team Championships, with 2 referees assigned to the match since they had a habit of knocking one out, which they did. And that, of course, became very integral to the fact that Carl Anderson had a handful of tights, which if there had still been 2 referees at the time, it would have been seen, because one got knocked out and the other ref had to replace him in the ring. Your new WWE Raw Tag Team Champions, The Club, somebody too sweet me, baby, somebody give me a too sweet. I very much enjoyed it. I thought the ending was right. Finally, The Club are champions. I think that's the right thing to do. And of course, you have the volatile relationship of Sheamus and Cesaro that is going to help continue the story forward and everything. And yeah, I thought it was a very good tag team match. You know, these 4 work extremely well together, and it was a very entertaining and very good opening match for the show. Then you had the 6 women tag. And mind you, I'm kind of going through most of these fast so I can get to sort of the big ones. Because we're almost an hour. And I don't want you to be here all night. So, but Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella, and Naomi versus Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, and Natalya. And this is your pretty standard 6 women tag match. But, you know, still, it's gotten better now that the female wrestlers are better. And the big surprise here is Naomi getting the spotlight, Naomi getting the shine, and Naomi getting the win. And, yeah, I actually enjoyed the match. And, yeah, again, the build for Naomi, which I think has been extremely warranted. I think of all the female wrestlers, as we've had sort of Divas Revolution with Bayley and Sasha Banks and Charlotte and the conversation about them and the conversation about Becky Lynch and Mickie James and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Bella and everything, I think the one that's gotten lost in the shuffle has been Naomi. And that Naomi definitely deserves a championship for the hard work she's done. I really like her style. She's really shined, I think, every time she's out there. And, yeah, which is ultimately this has led to her having a title match at Elimination Chamber, which I think is extremely warranted, and I look forward to it, actually. So it was better than it usually is, and a surprising person picks up the win on Alexa Bliss, on the champion herself. So I thought very good. By the way, that had a time of 9 minutes and 35 seconds. The tag match took place in 10 minutes, 29 seconds. And our final match for the pre-show, which basically kind of was a squash match, but kind of not, because it had storytelling elements of it, was Nia Jax versus Sasha Banks, which had a time of 5 minutes and 10 seconds. And, yeah, like I said, she just ran through Sasha Banks. But again, it's that story of she's still recovering, Bayley's coming out to help her, and, you know, Banks, who was just a champion months ago, now being completely manhandled, or I guess womanhandled in this case. And, yeah, this is all storyline, and it's, again, that's why it's taking place on the pre-show. And I think, honestly, yeah, I think it's being handled very well. I'm going to continue to enjoy this very slow build of Sasha Banks' heel turn on, particularly, which is probably going to happen on Bayley when she eventually wins the title. And that be sort of the final straw that breaks her back. Speaking of Bayley, by the way, because, ladies and gentlemen, that is a professional segue. The very first match of the pay-per-view proper was for the WWE Raw's Women's Championship as Charlotte Flair defeated Bayley. I've had to think about this for a long time because I did enjoy the match overall, but I didn't know if I enjoyed the ending because I didn't know if I enjoyed Charlotte going over clean on Bayley. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it was the right thing to do. And that it was the right thing, especially if hopefully it is Bayley versus Charlotte at WrestleMania. And, you know, that would be the place to break Charlotte Flair's pay-per-view streak, which really, I guess, of course, the thought process here is that that streak can't go on much longer because it's... But they're rolling with it, and if they're going to make a story element of it now, it's got to be getting close to being broken. And so, again, as I may have mentioned, the whole breaking, you know, if Bayley wins it there, that being the final straw, and that ultimately leads to the heel turn of Sasha. Again, multiple stories going at different paces, coming then ultimately coming together in perfect harmony. But, like I said, very good match. Bayley got the shine, got the put more of herself out there in regards to showcasing herself on the main roster. I mean, we know Bayley is good, but her matches since coming to Raw haven't been sort of the quality that she had like with Asuka or with Sasha yet. And this came closest to it. But, you know, as she gets comfortable being on the main roster, they will come. Oh, those good matches will come. So the potential for the future is really high here. Our next match would be the no disqualification match for the WWE Universal Championship sponsored by WWE Crash Cades Toys, featuring the stipulation that Chris Jericho was to be suspended in a shark cage above the ring as Kevin Owens defended against Roman Reigns. And I really enjoyed this match. Again, I think Roman Reigns is just, from my situation, I think it's unfair how people boo him. I agree. You see it with interviews all the time of wrestlers saying how they think it's really unfair how horrible Roman Reigns has been booked. I agree with that. It's hard because he continues to get booed and booed for no good reason. And he just keeps putting out these good to great matches, in particular with Kevin Owens. And this one was no different. Again, this had a sort of situation, the sort of same thing that happened with Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada went and reviewed that to where, you know, Kevin Owens set up that pyramid of chairs, and you knew the match wasn't going to end until somebody went through that pyramid of chairs. And, like, they're having these near falls on the other side of the ring, and it, but in your mind, you're like, I know it's not the end of the match yet, because no one's gone through that lovely pyramid of chairs that you guys took such quaint time setting up. And that's the one sort of criticism I have of the match, is like, some of the suspense of those near falls were hurt by the fact that as a fan, and it's the tough thing of trying to like get fans to let go of reality, which is tough for anybody working in entertainment. But in particular with wrestling, you know, when there are certain tropes that you know are going to happen, because no one sets up a piece of furniture without anybody going through it. It's like, you're not going to set up like 13 tables and have nobody go through any of the tables. Though that would be an interesting match just to see the reaction of there being like a no DQ match, anything goes, and 13 tables get set up and none of them get used. And then there was a riot that made what happened in Philadelphia at the Royal Rumble a couple years ago look like just a small argument. Which, by the way, Royal Rumble next year is returning to Philadelphia. And my one question is, whose dick did the mayor suck to get them to return to Philadelphia after what happened in 2014? I can tell you this, Roman Reigns ain't winning in Philadelphia. I can tell you that for sure. If WWE has an ounce of integrity left, they are not going to troll fans and have Roman Reigns win. They're not. They're not. They're not. But this, by the way, going back, going back on Roman Reigns, and that came out dirty. I entertain myself, folks. This was, I really enjoyed this match. Just great back and forth. I love the use. It wasn't just all out hardcore brawl. Every weapon that was used for a maniacal purpose and you had intent and you could feel everything. And it was a really good back and forth match. And as I said, I really enjoy watching Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens go together. I think they have great chemistry. They have great fluidity. And not as great as two other people, which we're going to get into. Oh. We're going to get into, folks, in just a little bit. So I thought it was a great match. And then I actually enjoyed the ending. I enjoyed Braun Strowman again. And I thought it was a great way of, like, it's setting up Fastlane for, you know, as we found out by this Raw, it could be Strowman versus Reigns. And I really can't wait to see that fight. I'm really looking forward to just two big hosses going at it. There's something about seeing two big hosses going at it that's really entertaining. At the same time, it also gave Kevin Owens a signature win because, you know, you can't say he didn't earn it. He played by the rules. And he got that win. And that's that big signature win. It was a really good match. And, very much enjoyed it. You knew, like, things like the brass knuck was like, it was like, I don't know many things about this shark cage. I do know one thing. I know brass knucks will be involved. They will be getting thrown down at some point because every manager has brass knucks when they go into the shark cage. And sure the hell enough. By the way, we've had two shark cage matches within months of each other. Could we let the gimmick die? I mean, are we done trying to sell a toy now? I just want to know, or should we expect one at WrestleMania? Our next match was for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship as Neville featured. I guess you could say that was dominant as he has been, but faced the champion, Rick Swan. And Rich Swan, excuse me. And Rick Swan is his brother. He goes, "I'm Rick Swan, bitch!" Oh, and I've turned everything to Dave Chappelle. As it should be. Sorry. I need substance. But, yeah, this was a really wonderful match. Really enjoyed it. Again, just Neville is at the top of his game right now with the character work that he's doing. Just, again, switching up his styles, music, everything. The ground and pound style that he's doing, not much high flying. And yet he looks great and he's so believable at it. It really, it's the ending of this match that really solicited all of this. Into understanding to where he hits the superplex and he covers Swan, but as soon as Swan kicks out, he doesn't complain or do anything. He immediately throws him into a submission, into that Rings of Saturn submission, and gets the fall by, you know, tap out. And yeah, just the viciousness, the unrelentingness, just, oh. And mind you, you know, Corey Graves and Austin Aries were great on commentary here. Really wonderful. This was a really good match. It's the type of match we expect to see from the Cruiserweights. And the Cruiserweights are getting better. 205's getting better and better. I have to say, I agree with Matty J and T-Dub in that, you know, right now Raw isn't helping the Cruiserweights. And I think they need to get away from Raw. Just be a, you know, again, this is a good thing to point out that maybe they should have switched the Cruiserweights over to SmackDown. But, yeah, really good Cruiserweight match. And I don't know how the crowd stayed hot for what the next match was because, in this case, you had three wonderful matches. By the way, the Kevin Owens Roman Reigns match went 22 minutes, 55 seconds. Charlotte Flair versus Bayley went 13 minutes, 5 seconds. And Neville versus Rich Swan went 14 minutes even. But that brings us to my boy John Cena, because he deserves your respect, facing the WWE Champion, AJ Styles. The champ that runs the camp and the face that runs the place, or did at least for the next 24 minutes and 10 seconds, as they faced off for the WWE Championship. And yes, I'm going to say it, Matty J, in what is right now the match of the year. Fight me, bro. Fight me. And I'm just going to sit here and say it, because I know. Maddie's, I listened to the podcast, Maddie. I listened when you started off talking about this match by saying, "Mattis, I know you're listening. It's not the best match of the year." Like, I will reiterate what I told Maddie J on Twitter. And I think on Facebook as well. And reiterate this to, of course, my good friend Corey Wilson has argued this to Mr. Omega, to Kata, to anybody that wants to take it up, this challenge. I welcome anybody who wants to debate me on this. Anytime, anywhere, any place, you name it, I will be there and I will gladly debate you. Of course, nobody's going to take me up on this because everybody knows that I will win this debate. And I'll especially note it after we talk about this because, like I said, match of the year. The crowd was hot from the entrances to John Cena winning. They were loud and the energy felt throughout the match was astronomical. The fluidity, which by the way, with all due respect, again, it's one of the things. Kenny Omega and Okada really didn't have that fluidity until the very end of the match. That's why the end of the match felt so spectacular. But this match had that fluidity from front to back. They stayed in the ring, which, considering most championship matches nowadays, is almost unheard of. Back and forth, you know, it wasn't just big move, big move, big move, hit a big move, hit a big move, false finish everywhere. They flowed into their moves, into the submission sequence to where I'm trying to think. I think it started with AJ going into the calf killer. And then Cena reverses that into the STFU, which then gets reversed itself by AJ into his own version of the STFU, which then eventually gets reversed by Cena into the figure four lock, which, by the way, I didn't know Cena knew the figure four lock, but damn. And it wasn't the best, no, but it was still damn good. The selling by both men were spectacular. Like, you felt every hit. You felt like it hurt. You felt like it was punishing. It felt stiff. Even if it wasn't stiff, it felt stiff. Cena gets hit with an enziguri and takes a face-first bump. Don't tell me that Cena doesn't sell, okay? Because he sold the hell in this match, so did AJ. AJ and Cena were just equal. Like, they showed in this match that right now there is nobody better in wrestling than John Cena and AJ Styles. Period. Period. I mean, I welcome any argument, but I'll let you know right now, in that debate, you will lose, because there is nobody better right now than AJ Styles, the Phenomenal One, and John effing Cena. But I keep going back to this term, fluidity, because the match just flowed, the ebb and flow, the back and forth between the wrestlers and the near fall. And the near fall, and I think Dave Meltzer talked about this, it just gave it this, everybody says, I don't like Japanese wrestling matches. Well, I love Japanese wrestling matches, and this felt like an independent Japanese wrestling match. The back and forth. But what really sold me on that idea, and really, it put the exclamation point on this match, was how it ended. Now, I don't necessarily agree with maybe Cena winning the title here, especially if he's just going to drop it tomorrow. But at the same time, it's also hard to argue that because, I mean, of course, I'm also hoping he wins, and I actually will look forward to Cena versus Orton. I know a lot of people won't, but bite me on that. With LPH on, I look forward to seeing Orton versus Cena, but just because they're now seasoned veterans, and Cena has so much more maneuvers than the last time he faced Orton, by the way, was the unification ladder match. All that was before Cena started adding moves to his repertoire. It was before the U.S. title challenges, for all of that. So, yeah. Cena has new moves. Orton is just working this heel, part of the Wyatt family gimmick, wonderfully. It's going to be different than what they've done before, and I look forward to it. But just the back and forth, and the explanation point was, again, they build up. Styles hits the Styles Clash, but he can't make the cover because he's so tired, and it's obvious that he didn't get all of it. Cena starts moving immediately, but Cena, instead of getting up, sort of plays a bit of possum because he lets AJ get up and set himself up for the forearm, and when he springs board to the rope, quickly, like a cat, gets under, catches Styles in position for the Attitude Adjustment, hits an Attitude Adjustment, gets up, rolls through AJ Styles, and through the roll, gets him back on his shoulder, and hits him with another thunderous Attitude Adjustment that had such force against it. Ugh. Like, that is like a Japanese match to where the finish is not just one finisher. It's, I'm going to hit you with my finisher. Then I'm going to pick you up again, and I'm going to hit you with the finisher because I'm going to make sure you stay down. And John Cena made sure AJ Styles stayed down. Like, there was, through all the false finishes, with that finish, there was no question that AJ Styles was staying down. 1, 2, 3, and your new 16-time WWE World Heavyweight Champion, my boy John Cena. Ba-ba-da-ba. By the way, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, so I can't be screaming that loud, but ba-ba-da-ba. Ba-ba-da-ba. It really actually does make my heart feel proud, which is, for people like me, this is the other thing that ultimately makes this match over the top. And it's something that if I ever do a debate with anybody, Matty J, on Kenny Omega and Okada versus this match, it's something I'll bring up to probably why Matty likes that match more and I like this match more, and it's emotion. Now, people like Matty might have more emotion for the Omega Okada match, and that's okay. This is not something to where it's like, don't have emotion for this. But this match, particular for people like me, who feel like Cena getting 16 titles was important because it was important for him to be recognized as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, to be recognized by the company, by his peers, by everybody, as deserving of that spot on wrestling's Mount Rushmore, as deserving to be mentioned in the same breath as Ric Flair and Bruno Sammartino and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Dusty Rhodes and all the other greats that came before him. That, while every other wrestler just hated him for no reason, those of us who have stuck with him since the beginning, to see him finally accomplish this to where there can be no question of his greatness anymore, especially after he sold everything wonderfully, sold it stiff, fluid, just a great back and forth match that, and again, let me give it to Styles, who was Cena's dancing partner, to which, again, the other part of emotion here is that I called it years ago that Styles and Cena would fucking tear the roof off the house of any man one-on-one match that they had, that they would steal every show, that they would work so well together, and I was goddamn right to fucking shove it. And I don't know what I'm talking about. It's like seeing two of my favorite wrestlers go out there, if not two of my favorite wrestlers go out there, not only steal the show, because by the way, JBL, somebody calls the San Antonio police because these boys just stole the show. Oh, they did more than steal the show. They may have just stole the year. Because the emotion behind Cena winning that 16th title, which may only be eclipsed, and that's only if the match is just as good, by him winning 17. But to do that, to all of this, it's like there's so much emotion in this match. There's so much invested in this match. This match had so much meaning to it. You combine that with the fluidity of the match. The fact that it felt so real. And I don't mean real like wrestling's real. I mean, and talking about the selling, and then that they made it feel believable and real, that they stayed within the ring. And mind you, they did this all in half the time that Omega and Okada had. Oh my God. It's... Again, I accept anybody who's willing to debate with me. I accept anybody who's willing to debate. You will lose. And Hairball, if you're listening, you can dab me all you want. All day long, all night long, 24/7. Y'all mother effers know I'm right. You know I'm right. You know I'm right. You know I'm right. I'm thinking about this match. It's got my blood pumping. Wanting to fight somebody. Makes me want to fight somebody. It is me. That's on one side of the mirror. I'm just starting to cry. Because again, it's that emotion. And it's ultimately the thing that this match had so much more of over Omega and Okada was emotion. Emotion. Fluidity. The ebb and flow, the maneuvers, all the maneuvers were clean and crisp. It's like, even if they did mess up, you could barely notice it. If you did not even notice it. Because I didn't notice them messing up at all. It's just like, yeah, I am partial in a way to this match. Because like I said, it's two guys who I knew would work absolutely well together, who did work well together, still in the goddamn show, and watching a guy who I've been watching for over 15 years now, that nobody wanted to give a chance to, that people disrespected just because Vince apparently at some point decided that he was the guy who for 15 years has been carrying the WWE on his back, when people like Batista and Brock Lesnar and others like them abandoned the WWE because they wanted to go to USC. Cena carried this company on his back and still carrying the company. He is the measuring stick. And again, this honor, I can watch this match over and over and over and over and over again. This is truly, right now, the match of the year. And we're only in January. And I say, right now, is the match of the year, because I don't know what we're going to see. I hope there's something that can beat it, because for something to beat Cena versus Styles as match of the year right now, damn, motherfuckers, it's gonna have to be perfection. And that's only good for us. That brings us to our last thing for the Royal Rumble, and that is the Royal Rumble match itself. 30-man Royal Rumble. Let me run down the list of entrants from their draw. At number one, we had Big Cass. Number two, Chris Jericho. Number three, Kalisto. Number four, Mojo Rawley. Number five, the gentleman wrestler, Jack Gallagher. Number six was Mark Henry. At number seven, you had Braun Strowman. At number eight, you had Sami Zayn. You had, at number nine, The Big Show. At number 10, you had the perfect 10, Ty Dillinger. At number 11, you had James Ellsworth. At number 12, you had Dean Ambrose. Number 13 was Baron Corbin. Number 14 was Kofi Kingston, the first of the New Day. At number 15, you had The Miz. At number 16, Sheamus. At number 17, you had Big E. At number 18, you had Rusev. At number 19, you had Cesaro. At number 20, you had Xavier Woods. At number 21, you had Bray Wyatt. At number 22, you had Apollo Crews. At number 23, your winner, as we mentioned, or may have not mentioned, I'm sorry, but number 23 had your winner at Randy Orton. Number 24, Dolph Ziggler. Number 25, Luke Harper. Number 26, Brock Lesnar. Who would only stay in the Rumble for 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Number 27 was Enzo, the realest G in the room, Amore. Number 28 saw Bill... number 28, excuse me, saw Goldberg. Number 29 saw The Undertaker. And at number 30, the troll of trolling. And at number 30, Roman Reigns. And I can only guess the only reason Roman Reigns is there... I don't know really why, but a lot of people are like, if Roman Reigns is in, why wasn't AJ? I'm like, AJ just wrestled a 25-minute match of the year where he was beaten. I don't think he was exactly had the ability to wrestle anymore that night. He deserved his rest. But honestly, this was a great Royal Rumble from start to finish. I mean, you had Big Cass and Omori opening it up, and just in a fun way. Big Cass and Jericho looked great together. Kalisto came in, and Kalisto looked strong for a while. And again, and that's what I like. Even Kalisto may have not been used well on TV and everything, still made to look strong. Like, he lasted a good almost 10 minutes, as he lasted 8 minutes in the match. And had to be eliminated by Braun Strowman, who would have the most eliminations at 7. Jack Gallagher, who was pretty much the sort of also the comedy section, as he brought what are they calling it? Michael III? I'm blanking on the name. I apologize, but it's something the third. But it's his umbrella. I did a lot of umbrella things that were really, really funny. He was great in it. The moment where Mark Henry came down and came face, where he eliminated Jack Gallagher, who did try to do his best Murray Poppins, but it didn't work. Then came out Braun Strowman. By the way, the entrance was so long that the bigger wrestlers had to be, sort of not towed, but, escorted out. They had like a cart where they stood on the back, very much like WrestleMania 3, and were driven down to the ring. Because Braun Strowman could run, but Mark Henry isn't running. Neither was the Big Show, who would show up a little two spots later. But the face off between Henry and Braun Strowman, that was great. The face off between Big Show and Strowman was great. The pop for Ty Dillinger was amazing. Sami Zayn came in at number 8. Man, I called him winning it, but he almost made it, but damn the Undertaker. Damn the Undertaker to hell. Wasn't for the Undertaker, Sami Zayn probably would have won it. I'm just going to say that. He was my pick, damn it. He was my pick. We could have had Owens versus Zayn, but no. Undertaker had to have his spotlight. James Ellsworth was the other sort of comedy moment where he comes down, doesn't get in, and then the next spot is Dean Ambrose, and he comes down and is like, yeah, we're going together. They go in, and Dean Ambrose just like stays on the ring, waits, as Braun Strowman breaks Ellsworth in half, and then just like dumps him over. Then you had the great moment at 13 where Baron Corbin. And I love this because they made Strowman look like a beast. And you think he's going to last to the end of the match and be something to deal with Undertaker and Goldberg. But no, here comes Baron Corbin. And the combined strength of Sami Zayn, Dean Ambrose, and Baron Corbin, ultimately, with a clothesline from Baron Corbin, knocks Braun Strowman out. And that was like a big shocker, and it was an amazing sort of moment in that Rumble, and I love it because it really made Baron Corbin look strong. And I'm going to sit here and say, this is going to be the year of Baron Corbin. Like, he has got everything you want. He's got a great finisher, an explosive finisher that looks amazing and everything. And Baron Corbin, this is his breakout year. This is it. The next entries, all good. Starting with Kofi Kingston, his big sort of saving thing, you know, because Kofi has been known for his amazing moments where he prevents himself from being eliminated. This one, it was him sort of holding on to the edge because they had the sort of new ring post things. Was uninspiring. That's really the one of the very few criticisms I have of this match. But, and, you know, at this point, you had them building up the ring, building up the ring. As they were building up, there were really not many eliminations. Apollo Crews would be eliminated by a little bit by Luke Harper. There was a moment where the New Day were eliminated by Sheamus and Cesaro, who would then be eliminated by Chris Jericho. As I'm trying to look to also help me remember who the other people would eliminate. Because then you had at number 26, the magic number 26 number, Brock Lesnar. And that's sort of the other thing is, like, there was a moment where it felt like maybe the crowd was getting a bit too bored because none of the big guys came out. But then they came out, and then everybody got fired up. Because you had Brock Lesnar. Then came out Enzo Amore, who was sent to be fucking killed by Brock Lesnar. You can send your roses and wreaths at the acquired address. But then number 28 came out, Goldberg. And what did my boy Goldberg do? Oh, he eliminated Brock Lesnar in quick fashion. Just clotheslined him out like he was nothing. And all I can think while watching that is, like, Shin Dagger Colonel is not happy about this. He is not happy about. He is about as happy as this as a cat is of actually taking a bath. And, yeah. I enjoyed every bit of it. Undertaker came out, like I said, damn you, Undertaker, because not only does he eliminate Goldberg, he also eliminates Sami Zayn. So, you know what the very funny thing is? Undertaker had the second most eliminations with 4. He eliminated Goldberg, Sami Zayn, The Miz, and Sami Zayn, The Miz, and Baron Corbin. So, like, two of my favorites, Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn. Damn you, Undertaker. Then, of course, Roman Reigns, the ultimate troll of trolls, came out, and, like, oh my god. It's like, ooh, this is going to be 2014 all over again. But they set it up beautifully. Bray Wyatt gets eliminated by Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns goes to hit the Superman punch. There's a dodge, and RKO out of nowhere by Randy Orton, which leads to the clothesline over, and your winner, the shocking win. I don't think many people predicted this, but Randy Orton winning the Royal Rumble. I gotta admit, I did not see it coming. Overall, this is a really, really good Royal Rumble match. So, yeah. And that brings us to the end of the 2017 Royal Rumble. Favorite moments and matches. Starting with moments, number 3, the extraordinary gentleman, Jack Gallagher, and his umbrella, and just the wonderful things that they do. And that was a really good, funny moment. Number 2, the elimination of Braun Strowman in the Rumble by Sami Zayn, Dean Ambrose, and Baron Corbin. That was tremendous and wonderful, and it was a wonderful, shocking surprise that happened. I don't think anybody foresaw coming. But number one is John Cena becoming a 16-time WWE World Heavyweight Champion. There's no denying him entry into that spot on Mount Rushmore anymore, no matter what anybody says. And like I said, feel free to argue with me, but it's a fight you won't win. And favorite matches of the night, I think most of it's not going to be surprising. But number three for me was Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns. Number two was the Royal Rumble match itself, absolutely spectacular. But my number one match, obviously, match of the year, as of right now, because whatever unseats it is going to be absolutely perfection, and I hope we see it. Match of the year, John Cena versus AJ Styles for the WWE Championship. End of the night, there may be debate on what was better, but I think, without a doubt, Royal Rumble was better than NXT TakeOver San Antonio. Not by a huge bit, but it's like, no longer was this the WWE pay-per-view the after show. It's like, Mike Schell makes the joke. It's like, oh, this was the NXT TakeOver whatever, or post-show. Or, they make the joke. This wasn't the post-show. Royal Rumble held its own. There's stuff that you can disagree with. There's questions. It's not perfect, but damn, was every match almost not entertaining? Every match was fun. Every match was entertaining. Every match continued storylines while at the same time having great wrestling. There are questions and stuff, but front to back, from the pre-show to the very end, the Royal Rumble 2017 kept you so entertained. And you combine that with the NXT TakeOver San Antonio they had the night before, you had a tremendous weekend of wrestling. But the Royal Rumble right now, in my mind, and I keep going back and forth right now. I mean, we're just talking about January, so we don't really know yet. But as of right now, I keep going back between Wrestle Kingdom 11 and Royal Rumble 2017, and I think 2017 Royal Rumble was better as of right now, because it was just match after match of wonderfulness, not a bad match at all night. So Royal Rumble 2017 gets a 4.75 out of 5 from me. Almost perfect. And, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I was hoping we wouldn't go this long, but, when I get to talk about John Cena being the best wrestler in the world, things happen. So, you know the spots you can find me, all the places you can find me. You know how to get there. Make sure you continue to support the Absolution Network by checking out my stuff along with Tiger Curl stuff. And next time out, I don't know what... Well, I do know what I'm going to be doing. I don't know what year yet, but I do know this. I think it's time we go back to some WCW. Some early WCW. And of course, February, WCW, you can only be talking about one thing. Super Brawl, baby. But that's next time on CMG's Wrestling Reviews. But until that time, remember that I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and you can't teach that. Why? Because I'm CMG. Recognize. You're all alive and you're all alive.
and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you, yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, I'm breathing out too negative, but I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand amount of feet won't be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. How the darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's the feeling, my love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but your dream.